Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
G'day and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, where we're waiting for the Doom Patrol to come back, and it's getting shorter and shorter every single time, which is very exciting. Yeah.
Yes, hello, I am Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can email us if you wish at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can reach out on our wonderful Facebook page, and all of our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
And I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks with an X. And we also have a show Twitter account called Wilfred, who's sentient, and Wilfred will chat to you independently of us, which makes our life easier.
Well,
sometimes. Jinx. I think it's your turn.
You jinxed me, dude. I can't talk.
Oh, sorry. How do we unjinx? I've forgotten.
I don't know. This week on the show, we are diving back into Volume 1 from the 60s, and we're going to be looking at issues 109 and 110, which are quite action-packed and get a bit crazy. Yeah, so that's going to be good fun. But before that, Paul, what's been happening in the week that was? Well, the 2 weeks that were.
The 2 weeks that were. Well, I think there's only one thing on everybody's lips tonight, and that is lip gloss. No. Rebirth. Rebirth.
Right. Rebirth.
Yeah. Yes. And we get to see the stupid new DC logo in action on a comic.
So you're not a fan of it then?
Well, I've lived for a few of these. I don't think it's... it's just another logo.
Okay, so what's your favourite logo? This is the stupidest worst one.
I'd probably have to go back to the, you know, the black one with the stars that was around for decades. I just associate that with really good DC comics, to be honest. But I'd never minded the swoosh one. Like, yep. That never bothered me. Mm-hmm. But I think this, I like this less than the swoosh. But as I think I'll get used to it. And as I said on Twitter, it's a good way to carbon date your trades after a few years.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. But Rebirth. Did you read Rebirth, Mike?
I did read Rebirth.
And did you cognitively process what you read at any point?
Yes. there's a fair bit going on. I picked up a lot of meta commentary about the state that DC is currently in and what they're trying to return to and, you know, move away from the doom and gloom and the grittiness. And that's kind of what they're saying caused the Flashpoint incident 5 years back.
It's a little bit of a, we're sorry for taking away all your continuity. You can have it back, and you can have all of it back, and we'll throw in the Watchmen as well. There you go.
Yeah, sure. I also like that they threw in Pandora from the whole, you know, Trinity of Sin and Trinity War event, because we haven't seen her in a while, and what do they do with her? They blow her up.
Well, she is the symbol of the new 52.
Yes. Slight spoiler warning. We're not going to bother with a spoiler shield tonight. Hell, people have been spoiling this comic for days now. Hopefully you managed to avoid them, but we're just going to talk about them here right now.
Right. Spoilers.
Yeah. No spoiler shield. Just live with it, guys. The one thing that was spoiled for me was just the mention of the Watchmen. And I kind of knew they were coming, and it was interesting to see them not be mentioned or referenced or slightly appear until the very end. I thought that was kind of cool. But interesting that the implication is that Dr. Manhattan is the big bad in this new setting. So do you think it's a reboot or just a readjustment?
I would say it's a resetting it's a reinstatement of the old continuity. Mm-hmm. But I was actually surprised it didn't have a clear end point with an, you know, this is the new status quo and this is everything explained. It's actually made the status quo part of the mystery and probably the antagonists for the DC Universe moving forward, I think. So it wasn't the neat end point where, you know, like end of Flashpoint, bang, everything's new, here we go. You know, this is kind of a bit muddier, but it's saying, hey, you like Wally West, he's back. Hey, you know.
If you like Blue Beetle, he's back.
Yeah.
Or they're back even. So.
Yeah, and that's where I actually felt a bit lost. Like I thought, is the continuity being reset as we go, or are we getting to an end point where the continuity is reset? I mean, I guess it's, you know, I haven't been following what's been going on with Titans Hunt, but that has, you know, previous versions of the Titans rocking around in the DC universe and everything. Right. So it's all a bit, yeah, it's, you know, whatever you want, you can have it back. We're sorry.
It's a work in progress almost.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I was reading other comments that, yeah, it's not, yeah, not entirely erasing the last 5 years. It's just sort of politely shoving things back on the shelves where they should be almost. So I do think for people that are thinking of diving into DC for the first time with Rebirth, as some people did back when the New 52 launched, I don't think this issue is particularly new reader friendly.
I don't know.
It's just my hot take, you know.
It's your hot take.
Yeah.
I think it's a good, like it did a very good job of explaining the Flash stuff with Wally and Barry, and I thought that was the gateway. And I was pleasantly surprised to find it's a Flash story, not just a DC Flash universe.
Yeah.
So it's very much from Wally West's perspective. And I was reading it on my tablet, and Geoff Johns got me. I thought Wally was gone, and so I got a real gasp when the panel slid into place where Barry rescued Wally from oblivion at the last second.
Yeah,
that was worked very well on Guided View. I didn't see it coming.
But I think for long-time readers, they're probably going to appreciate a lot more of what's shown in there.
Probably.
Whereas the newer readers that, you know, may not have read Watchmen or may not have followed DC at all over the last 5 years or before then even, there'll be things that they kind of miss. And I think people who have been reading DC for longer will appreciate more what's being shown in there. I mean, it's still a good story. It's still a really good comic. You know, it's fun and it's exciting and it's drawn and written really well. But that was just something that kind of irked me a little bit about it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think like there were people upset about before Watchmen and the way that trod on, you know, Alan Moore's intellectual ownership of it, if not legal, lack of legal ownership.
But, legal schmeagle.
Yeah. But this won't make them happy, I'm pretty sure.
Probably not, no. Did you read any of Before Watchmen?
Yeah, I read all of Before Watchmen. I bought the Darwin Cook volume.
Uh-huh.
Which also came with the Amanda Connor, what's the lady called? The
Silk Spectre.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Alzheimer's is going to be so much easier with you around. the Minutemen story and the Silk Spectre story in one volume. Because I thought, you know, win-win there, because I like both those creative teams so much. But I got all the other editions from the library and read them all, and I actually thought the Ozymandias story was pretty good. This ties into I think at the end of that where he says he's going to go and create some worlds and, you know, create some reality. And so you know, he got together with his marketing people and created 52 and
right.
But continuity will out, as it were. So, you know, I think in my collection of, like, I mostly collect things in hardcovers and trades. You know, I think the New 52 will be a little wading pool off to the side of the mainstream.
Okay.
For me. I mean, I think there's some stuff that was really strong for the New 52, like the Wonder Woman title, you know, Batman by Snyder and Capullo. That was great. And, you know, odd little things like, you know, I really like Dial H.
Yeah, that was a great series.
Yeah, but on the whole, my affection does not lie that strongly with the New 52.
Fair enough.
But I really bought into the hype at the start, and I bought a hell of a lot of titles. So, hype-wise, has this worked? Are you fired up for any titles coming out of this?
I am intrigued as to what is coming from DC in the near future. I have maybe about half a dozen titles on order from my comic store. Some of those I might be dropping depending on whether certain editorial people are still on the staff, which will be interesting because it means I won't be reading Green Lantern for the first time in a long time. I'm excited for the I love the Justice League. I'm excited to see what happens with them. Of course, I'm getting Detective Comics because I love that. Rucker and Nicola Scott on Wonder Woman. If you're not reading that, well, whatever. And Trinity, I've always been a fan of the concept of Supes, Wondy, and Bats working together. So I'm getting that as well. Maybe the Green Lantern books. We'll wait and see what happens there.
Oh, so torn, aren't you?
I am, because it could very well be that my entire Green Lantern collection begins and ends with two different rebirths.
Nice. Ooh, gotcha. I'm kind of looking forward to getting back to The Flash, because I thought the art was great for The Flash at the start of the New 52, but the story wasn't, and then the story and the art weren't, and... You know, that's a bit rough for me because I'm a long-term Flash fan, and that wasn't a title that I felt like continuing with. So, and the Green Lantern books lost me with their continuous crossovering, and really poor attempt at collecting that coherently in a nice flow. So, to that, I don't rate it anyway.
Wow, haven't heard that one in a while. Jeez.
Yeah, but I will come back for Wonder Woman in trades. I'll come back for Flash probably in trades. And because I'm a trade waiter, I can sit back and watch what goes well. And I'm intrigued by Suicide Squad. I want Suicide Squad to be the Suicide Squad that I know and remember from the 80s again.
You don't think it'll be slightly closer to the movie version?
Well, I mean, didn't Captain Boomerang get a sudden feature in the rebirth?
Yeah.
Why is he so prominent? Anyway, but why not? Why not?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm hoping, like, I like the creative team. Well, I like the writer on Suicide Squad, Rob Williams. Mm-hmm. I've been reading a lot of his Judge Dredd lately. And I got the unfollow trade the other day.
Oh, excellent choice, sir. What did you think?
I think it had a nice cover, and when I read it, I'll tell you more.
Oh, God, you're killing me, dude. I love Unfollow. It's a great, great story. It has commentary on social media and this expanding cast of characters and this weird psycho security guard who wears like an Aztec warrior type golden mask.
I'll get there. I've got too many library books and rebirth and things to read.
I'm just very excited for you, dude. Oh, it's a great story.
Oh, thanks, Mike. Thanks. Okay. All right. What's it say in the show notes this week?
In the show notes this week, there's something about a secret new segment.
Secret new segment. Yes. I'll tell you what that is, Mike. Okay. Jared Way has started doing weekly updates on his young animal status as things come together. We're heading for new Doom Patrol in September. Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye and other titles. And so he started putting updates on his website. So Wilfred pointed out that Darrington Way sounds like a classy neighborhood. And he coined the phrase going down on Darrington Way. So that's what we're going to do right now. We're going down on Darrington Way.
Right, okay.
So, the updates. We have a picture of Cliff sitting on a chair. Have you seen this picture?
Of him on the train, isn't it?
No, it looks like an art gallery because there's pictures of art behind him.
Maybe I'm misremembering it. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, well, you know what he's doing on this chair?
Sitting?
He's waiting. And the next piece of art, so we had a lovely piece by Nick Derrington of Cliff Waiting. So just like us. Right. Anyway, the next piece of art was a picture of a character now identified as Casey Brink. Mm. Brink with an E, like yes. Brinky. Mm-hmm. Casey Brink, and she is the person in the mask. And she's holding her mask and looking at it in this picture. Now, these masks, do you know they come from an album cover by Black Sabbath? Did you know that?
I'd read something along those lines, yes.
Yeah, so there's a Black Sabbath album called Never Say Die, which has two people wearing very, very, very similar masks to these, with the sort of tubes around the nose and everything. So Jared Way pointed that out in his write-up that this was based on that. And he had a second update every this was on, Thursday in Australia that these updates are dropping. So, you know, I think there'll be a new one tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And this had a picture of there was a panel detail from Doom Patrol issue 1, and it showed someone at an ATM and a security guard sitting next to them and a bin. So.
Ooh, action-packed.
Actually, no, I'm rethinking it. They look like video games.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, but the security guard, what's he doing?
Oh, look, roll on September.
He's waiting.
Oh, right, sensing a theme here.
Yeah, but one of the interesting details in that the writing and the art is coming first, and they're still making decisions on colorists and letterers, which Jared says it's important to do after you've seen the art, so...
Fair enough.
I'm getting pretty excited about this stuff.
Aren't you just?
I am. Anyway, that's it for going down on Derrington Way.
God, that name.
Is that ticking that I hear, Mike?
Oh, thank God it is too. It's the doom clock.
Woo!
Okay, so the Doom Clock is stuck in the past in that the last issue we had of a Doom Patrol book was still issue 22 of volume 5 from Keith Giffen and Matthew Clark, which was cover dated July 2011 and went on sale May 4th of that same year. So it's been a whole 5 years and 3 weeks since the last book. So, yeah, getting closer to September, gang. It's going to be awesome. Waiting for video games and waiting at art galleries. It's been 41 weeks since the appearance of the team in two different comics. So just over 10 months ago, we saw them in All-Star Section 8, number 3. They had a very small, brief cameo in a splash page of all the Justice League-type heroes. And in Justice League United, number 12, where we saw Stargirl recruiting Robot Man for her team's next adventure. But this week, in Doom Patrol history... going on sale May 28th in 1991 for the princely sum of $1.50 US, saw the release of one of Paul's favourite stories of all time. Issue number 45 of Doom Patrol Volume 2, Hunter.
Beard Hunter.
And if you want to hear us rave more about Beard Hunter and that insanely awesome and bizarre issue, we discussed this way back in episode 4, back in January of 2015. So go and check that one out if you want more ramblings from us on that.
And it's strange that you mention it. Did you see that Wilfred's retweet of someone who said that the Beard Society was from an old superhero, Superman book? Yeah. I never knew that.
No, nor did I. That's what I love about our fellow patrologists out there. We're all sharing the love and the knowledge. It's awesome.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yes. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
And when the evening comes, we smile.
In 1994, Mark Waid, Brian Augustine, and Barry Kitson began exploring the beginnings of the world's greatest superhero team over an epic 12-issue comic maxi series.
And yes, we've just begun.
That team was the Justice League of America, and that comic was JLA Year One. In 2016, 8 podcasts will come together to cover this series in a single month. That month is JL May.
Just the two of us, working together.
featuring the Fire and Water Podcast, The Power of Fishnets, Waiting for Doom, The Lantern Cast, Supermates Podcast, The Idlehead of Diabolu, Comic Reflections, and Views from the Long Box. Each podcast will cover one or two issues of JLA Year 1, and then coverage will move from show to show. It all starts in the Fire and Water Podcast with issues 1 and 2. Yes, we've just begun. JL May, an epic month for an epic series. Available where you find all good podcasts.
All I wanted was to send a signal to Mars. How could I have known it would teleport you here? Whoever you are, forgive me.
An alien, an innocent one, stranded on this planet.
It was a golden age. Our Martian civilization was at the height of its peace and prosperity.
White Martians came from beneath the planet's surface, bringing fire from the planet's guts, and they burned us all.
Every trace of our once great civilization was obliterated.
I lost my family.
My wife and my daughters.
I was the only survivor. The last of my kind.
I sought refuge on your planet.
On Earth, I was hunted for 50 years.
The humans are terrified of what they don't know. And sadly, I happen to fall into that category.
Detective John Jones is what you might call my human alter ego.
I'm not the only thing from outer space that's come, but right now, I'm the only thing that can stop alien invasion.
I dealt with these phantoms when I was a bounty hunter. I know how powerful they can be.
I can't fight these fugitives alone.
My name is John Jones.
Also known as the Martian Manhunter.
Leader of the Justice League.
Telepathy is one of my many abilities.
I am a shapeshifter.
Martian manpower?
Flight!
I change my state or phase or call upon new powers.
I'm Mars' sole survivor. There's a reason for that.
I will defend Earth.
The Idlehead of Diabolu, a podcast for John Jones, the manhunter from Mars, his world, and the vile menagerie of villains he must confront. Available through iTunes, Shout Engine, and the Internet Archive.
Right, today on Doomsplaining, we're going all the way back to 1967, February 1967, for Doom Patrol number 109. And it actually came out December 6th, 1966. That's even older. And the cost was a 12 cents for this comic. I wish they were 12 cents today so much. Edited by Murray Boltonoff, and the creative team was Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani.
You got there.
I got there. And a cover by Bruno Premiani. Mike, take us through it now. Go.
I will. Okay, issue 109. The action-packed cover shows Mento and Neg Man about to come to blows, and Rita's warning them that the giant monster called Mandred the Executioner is about to break free of his chains. And I realize earlier that I have this issue in my collection, and Mandred's a lovely shade of blue.
Ah.
He's a fierce-looking monster. Excellent stuff. So the story opens immediately on where we left the team at the end of issue 108, which we discussed in episode 55, with the team appearing to have perished, and Beast Boy and Chief are left shattered by this discovery.
And Mento.
Yeah. And trying to make the best of the situation, Chief instructs Gar to recover the weapon that, quote-unquote, killed the team, have him change into a gorilla, recover their bodies, and return to the team's rocket, which Niles will guide by remote control. So with Gar back at DPHQ, our heroes are placed in the Chief's life chamber, which is an interesting invention, to try and slow their bodies from dying, while the Chief and Gar examine the inner workings of the weapon that was left behind. Did you want to make a comment here about the life chamber?
It reminds me so much of the Princess Bride with Miracle Max saying, you know, they're not completely dead. Do you know the bit I mean?
I know the bit that you mean.
Look who knows so much, huh? Well, it just so happens that your friend here is only mostly dead. There's a big difference between mostly dead and all dead. Please open his mouth. Now, mostly dead, he's slightly alive. Now, all dead, well, with all dead, there's usually only one thing that you can do.
What's that?
Go through his clothes and look for loose change.
So, you know, slightly alive is, you know, not completely dead means slightly alive. So yes, they can come back. And they do.
A sudden noise from the live chamber alerts Gar that the team is still alive and there's much rejoicing. And Chief is determined that while the weapon diminished their life spark, they didn't die because its power had been turned down. And he wonders, was a member of the Brotherhood of Evil trying to spare them from the killing blow?
Subplot.
So the Chief tells the team that they have now the perfect opportunity to strike back at the Brotherhood, who believe that they're dead. But as poor Cliff doesn't quite understand this plan, of course, Mento overzealously tries to explain it, and so a fight breaks out.
Yeah.
Oh, men. Of course it breaks out. So Mento and Larry come to quite severe blows until Cliff breaks it up, and Rita admonishes them, and she finally reveals his plan. They're going to have a public funeral for the late Doom Patrol. So they're hearses taking their apparent bodies, you know, off for the funeral. Very sad. So news of the funeral reaches the Brotherhood, who are determined to now take out the defenseless Chief. And Gargoax reveals his ultimate weapon to them, a horrifying monster he calls Mandred the Executioner, who is made from the plastic men that Gargoax controls, and he has them sacrifice themselves into a giant vat. And they all kind of congeal into this big blue monster.
It makes so much sense.
Of course. You know what it is?
Comic book science.
There you go. Ding, ding. 10 points. Well done.
Take a drink.
Meanwhile, Chief and Gar wait for the Brotherhood to act, and they don't have to wait long before their headquarter alarm systems go off as the gigantic Mandred approaches. So Chief presses a nearby button, and these giant armor panels rise to protect the building just out in, like, in the sidewalk. They just shoot up and surround the building. But Mandred bursts through anyway. He's got this cosmic-powered weapon melting the walls away. And with the rest of the team hidden in the basement, they hear all this commotion, and Cliff says that they need to get up there because Chief ain't responding. And for a second, Chief manages to fend off Mandred momentarily with some sort of weird deterrent spray from his action chair. Now, in the issue, it's red, so I'm not quite sure what it's meant to be.
It's a flamethrower?
Well, no, it looks like, I don't know, the sort of foam you would use to put out fire. It doesn't look like a flame at all, really.
Could be a tomato spray.
Yes, the one thing that will destroy anything related to the Plastic Men, tomato spray. Yes, so the deterrent spray fires from the action chair, and because the elevator between the basement level and the main level is damaged, Negative Man is the first to arrive on the scene, flying up from the basement, but Mandred's weapon strikes him down with a bolt of energy. And then Cliff bursts onto the scene and begins to get the upper hand on the monster until Mandred grabs him and the heat from his own hand begins to melt Cliff's body.
Take a drink. Hot hands. Hot hands Mark One.
Yeah, wow. Evil hot hands. Ooh. Yeah. Rita embiggens herself up through the damaged elevator shaft, and she reaches an arm through the doors and begins clobbering Mandred over the head, but a bolt of energy from his weapon shocks her, and she falls back down and reverts back to normal size. And finally, everyone's favorite, Mento appears, and he's locked in a duel with Mandred, mental energy versus cosmic energy, and suddenly the Mento helmet explodes. Which, yeah.
Whoa.
I would have thought would have caused much more damage, but it's just like the helmet kind of lifts up off his head and blows up.
It's
very odd.
Yeah. Would have been a different comic if it killed him.
Oh, it would have been a different history altogether. Yeah. So this all becomes far too much for Gar, who springs into the fight. First, he becomes an elephant and he knocks Mandred over. Then he becomes a bird to escape from the monster's grasp. And then he becomes an eel and wraps himself around Mandred's throat and starts choking him.
Go Gar.
As you do. He's a wicked kid. With Mandred subdued, Chief gets Rita to grab another tank from somewhere. An ether tank, sorry, from somewhere. And they put the mask from the ether tank over Mandred's nose because it barely fits. And they administer the gas and knock him out cold completely.
Wow.
Right. The chief's plan, he says, is to chain up this giant monster in their basement and use him as bait to draw out the Brotherhood. Of course. What could possibly go wrong there? And the story ends here with Steve calling his business associates later on, much to their surprise, because he thinks that, you know, they're all dead. And he says, keep up the fight against Nicholas Galtry, who we then see in the final panels panicking after a phone call saying the court action to free Gar from his grasp is continuing.
Legal drama.
Legal drama.
Shall we quickly talk about this before we get to part two?
Sure.
Sure. Okay, now, a few things stood out to me. Mandred on the cover looks like an awesome dungeon boss.
Yes.
Don't you? Like, he's a big monster with spikes and he's and angry and snarly. Except when Mandred talks, he is incredibly articulate.
Yes, he is.
It's crazy.
Unexpectedly so, yes.
Now, where did he get... Like, he's made from melted plastic men and, you know, he's instantly... like hyper monologuing, like, you know, when he bursts into the headquarters, he says, "Know you now that this is Mandred, monarch of all living things, born of no man, tamed by no weapon. Watch you now as thy feeble fortress falls to my matchless power." So, like, where does that come from?
I don't know. Maybe, I don't know, one of Shakespeare's books fell into the vat. I don't know.
Yeah. Other things I loved is while half the team are waiting in the basement, so this while Gar and the chief are upstairs, they're playing with a brain dartboard.
Yeah. Nice touch. Yeah.
And you know, when Larry attacks Mandred, he gets completely crinkled in his negative form.
Yep.
Yeah. What else stood out? Yeah. But when they anesthetized him, I thought, what's going to happen with Mandred? Is he still around today? What, you know, is he a character that could someone bring back? Because the thought of this giant guy who just speaks so purple prose stuff all the time is quite funny. I mean, I could see Keith Giffen having a field day with this character.
Yeah.
You know, he looks like a great big monster, but he talks like a Shakespearean actor.
Yeah, it was quite action-packed and some interesting plans from the chief. Like, let's continue with the charade that we're all dead and, hey, let's get out the ether tank. And, of course, he's got an ether tank hidden somewhere. I mean, this is a dude that used to experiment on puppy dogs. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, this one. There is also a continuation of the, I guess, prequel story of Negative Man. As a backup tale in this, which is interesting. It's basically Larry trying to continue to find a meaningful purpose in the outside world with the rest of normal society. He takes up a job as a pilot for some eccentric explorer who owns an island in the Pacific, which is rich in nitrates, but it can't be worked because of an active volcano. So he wants Larry to do a bombing run, drop a bomb into the volcano to, you know, take care of it.
And, it's a bit involved.
Yeah, but it turns out that it's all a trick to try and get Larry to fail once again. And when he figures out that it was all a setup, he gets back and discovers that in classic Scooby-Doo type style, the eccentric explorer is just a dude wearing a mask, and the dude turns out to be Dr. Death.
It's Dr. Death, the guy who looks like Skeletor. Is a baddie, yeah. And his motivation now is to basically ruin Larry's employment prospects. That's his that's his master plan. He is like a reverse life coach.
An anti-life coach. Yeah, so he wants Larry to fail so much that he will have no option but to return to Dr. Death and work for him. Why would he?
Very amusingly, Larry exposes him and then says, "Oh, it's you," and walks away.
Yeah, it's like I've got this superpowered being inside of me, but yeah, I'll see you later. Like,
this guy straight up tried to kill you by sabotaging your plane.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, you.
Oh, Dr. Death, you look like a villain and you sure are one too.
Yeah, I'll get a job anyway without your trying to kill me.
Yeah, so, but yeah, that was kind of meh. The rest of the story, lots of fun. Good stuff. Come on, Paul, take us into issue 110.
Okay. No, 110 has a very, very busy cover. It's got all sorts of circles with people's faces, and it shows the main stars of the Doom Patrol as Robot Man, Elastigirl, I'll say, and Negative Man. And below that is a picture of an electrified body with the brain's skull casing on top. And it's burst through the walls. And there in front of them is Nicholas Galtry, the evil guardian of Gar, cowering against the wall. And there are two Beast Boys inside. What is going on?
Say what?
Say what? And he says to Galtry, "You sent me to destroy Beast Boy, Galtry, but which is the real one?" Ooh. And I'm not going to spoil anything by saying this scene is not in the comic at all.
Didn't you love when comics used to and sometimes still do that? They'd have this brilliant action on the cover, and yeah, it would not happen.
Yeah. Anyway, so the comic inside is called Trial by Terror, which hints at the legal action to come. This came out in March 1967, according to the cover, but according to Mike's much more accurate Amazing World of Comics, January 19, 1967 was when it actually came out, and it's a 12-cent thing with the same people all involved, and we'll get right into it. So it recaps that they have captured Mandred and tied him, chained him to the floor in a prone position. And the Brotherhood of Evil are scheming evilly and talking about their plans to destroy. They think they've destroyed most of the Doom Patrol, but now they want to finish off the Chief. And Madame Rouge is being fairly complimentary of the Chief's abilities and brain and how they should watch out for him. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so they, you know, they're worried about Madame Rouge stepping out of line. Gargarex expresses his concern. We see that Galtry has gone to see the man he knows as Abu Hulam, who is actually a gorilla known as Monsieur Malar to us. Now dispensing with all pretense to be a person. And he says, "Well, no, I'm not going to support you anymore in your fight against Mento, because we just did that to ensnare the Doom Patrol, and that's been done now. So rack off."
Yep.
I may have paraphrased that somewhat.
Close enough.
Yes. Anyway, so the Chief is going, "Well, why didn't the Brotherhood of Evil actually kill the Doom Patrol when they had them in their clutches in the last two issues?" And he goes to his massive computer, which is the size of a frickin' truck, and he pulls out a punch card, and it tells him that someone in the Brotherhood of Evil is in love with someone in the Doom Patrol. So, and it... it goes pretty normal by him saying it's Madame Rouge. It could have been much more interesting. Yeah. And he assumes that Madame Rouge is in love with Negative Man, who looks very bashful.
He does.
Bashful upon hearing this news. Meanwhile, we're getting ready for court. So Mento is talking with his staff about how to get this, and he drives off to court to sort out this legal ownership of Gar. Ownership? Guardianship. Anyway.
Ownership. God. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm not very legal. Anyway, we see that the Brotherhood of Doom have their rocket. No, the Brotherhood of Evil. Wrong thing. And they are ready to fly, and they fly to a place which looks suspiciously like somewhere in real life in New York, because there's a see-through globe of the Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the name of that place. Is that...
Well, wasn't it the World's Fair?
I think the world is sometimes fair, Mike, but, you know, now's not the time to discuss philosophy.
Boy, I walked right into that one, didn't I?
Yeah. Anyway. The rocket lands, and the Chief has tipped off the Doom Patrol that the rocket was coming, so Larry and Cliff are on site, and out of the rocket walks the three members of the Brotherhood of Evil. So and we can see that the brain has an electric body now. It's made of pure light energy, comic book science. But isn't there a great shot of Malar climbing down the ladder like a real gorilla?
That whole panel is just fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Anyway, so fighty fight fight. Everyone's in. So lots of talking, and Cliff runs in and gets clobbered in the junk by the looks of it.
Take a drink.
Look at the panel. not turned into junk, clobbered in the junk. Anyway, right. Negative Man unleashes, Larry collapses, take a drink, and he wraps himself around the electric body of the brain, and the brain strains and stretches and finally busts Larry, and we see concertinaed Larry Negative Man body.
Mm.
And then he gets whacked in the back, which is just, that's mean.
A bit much, yeah.
Need for that. But Larry rallies and is able to disrupt the energy, but the energy reforms and the brain gloats about it and it says how impossible it is to defeat me. Meanwhile, Mala has decided to kill Larry's inert body while the negative energy is flying around by climbing up on this globe and tossing Larry's body to the ground. And, you know, in these comics, Larry is sort of weakly aware of things while the negative energy is out of him. Mm. But Cliff runs and catches him, which is fortunate, and then uses his magnetic feet, which is good to see them back,
yeah,
to climb up the globe in a very amusing manner. Mm. And they, Mala and Cliff on the globe, fighting it out. And this is a beautiful, beautifully choreographed piece of work by Bruno Premiani. Mm-hmm. It's like an animation cells as, yes, they dance around the bars and swing around and hit each other and knock each other off. And
mm-hmm.
eventually Cliff gets the drop and knocks Mala out. And we see that the negative energy has returned to Larry's body just in time to stop him dying. But the electric body of the brain is coming over to bash Larry with the electric energy. And just as that's about to happen, Cliff, in a great feat of strength, picks up Mala and lobs him at the brain.
Yep.
Yeah. Madame Rouge stretches out a massive hand from the rocket ship and helps grab the unconscious Musa Mala. So she's very strong as well as being very stretchy.
Mm.
Yeah, but Larry pulls her arm and says, "Come to the arms of your lover, boy." And she slaps him in the face with a great big thwack.
Mm.
She is offended that he thinks that she would love him.
Yeah.
So the rocket ship leaves the Brotherhood of Evil Art departed, and Cliff has a good old laugh at Larry.
Yeah. And Larry's got quite a black eye.
Yeah. She really belted him one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so we see the Doom Patroller having tea, very civilized, back at their headquarters, and... yes, and they're discussing the Beast Boy case, and Chief says, don't forget, if the true identity of Beast Boy is revealed, that the green kid who runs around with Nicholas Galtry is the same as the green kid who runs around with the Doom Patrol. I'll just put that in your head. It's a crazy concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then they would lose the case because, you know, a bit of child endangerment going on with this child hanging out with the Doom Patrol.
Mm.
Look, if Batman can do this to Robin for decades, I don't see what the problem is here. Anyway.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, the rest of Doom Patrol return, and Larry is saying, "Well, she's not in love with me. Look what she gave me to prove it." And Chief is astonished, amazing, but the computer, and he goes and rechecks his maths. And then Rita, being the smartest person in the team often, says, obviously she's in love with the Chief. You know, have you ever looked closely at that craggy, shaggy red beard? Ooh, no, I haven't.
I think Rita has, though. Jeez.
Yeah, anyway, back at the Brotherhood of Evil, the brain is scolding Mala, being quite mean, considering that they later have such a romantic attachment.
I guess this bad.
It's off how it often starts in the early days with some people.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Harry met Sally when the brain met Mala. You know what I mean? Yeah. But the brain is aware of what Madame Rouge did and says, "You, Miss Lonely Hearts, you endangered our scheme with your childish emotions." So anyway, we haven't. We see the story has not forgotten about Mandred, who is still chained to the floor. And
yep.
He is, you know, saying without his scepter he can't break free, but he's saying a lot more wordily than I said that.
Right.
Then suddenly some solar energy comes through the window and he says, "Ah, the master's managed to send me solar energy." Isn't that sunlight?
That's what I was thinking, but Mandred's quite excited about the fact that, yeah, his great master, the brain, has managed to find a way to radio solar energy directly into his body. you would think sunlight, but I guess he's in a basement, so yeah.
I think we need to put this down to
comic book science.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, so, and he is able to start breaking his chains. Then we get all legal, so we're off to court, and they have their friendly witness who's going to testify about Galtry's dodgy dealings, but he's suddenly a hostile witness. Like, he's not corroborating their story, and Mento is horrified and says, this is all rubbish, and he's, you know, Gar has a tantrum, and the court case gets adjourned, and yeah, Mento is, you know, he's pretty angry about this. He said, I'm going to get directly involved. And then we see that Galtry is gloating to Gar, like Gar's home at night. And Galtry says, well, you can't get out. Look, I've electrified your window.
such good guardianship right there. Electrified fly screens all over the window. Yeah.
Yeah. So Gar turns into a bug and tries to fly out. He can't because the mesh is too tight. And then he decides he can get out as a microbe. But how does microbes don't have any form of propulsion? So he puts a fan in front of the window and then turns into a microbe and flies out. So very clever.
Very clever. Yeah.
But Mento has decided he's had enough, so he goes straight over to Galtry's and basically trashes the place with mental powers, busts open the safe, steals all the documents, throws everything all over the place. I don't think that's legal, but, you know, good on him.
Probably not, no.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, Galtry is not engaged in legal activity, so...
No, that's a lot of incriminating evidence flying around that room there.
Yeah, getting mentally collected by Mento. Anyway. Anyway, Gar has escaped. I don't know why he got out, actually. And he goes to see the chief, who's having a beer in a nice stein.
Yep.
Yep. And Gar is happy to join him for some food. So he starts chowing down, and they're talking about everything that's going on, like Rouge being in love with the chief and the court case. When suddenly Mandrid busts through the floor. Yes, and it says, yes, my tormentor, I am free again, free to culminate my sacred mission, your ultimate finite destruction. Take a breath, Mandrid. Golly. So it's a time for another fight in the comics. So, yes, Gar turns into a bird. Mandrid tries to grab him. Meanwhile, we see that Larry and Robot Man are at the movies.
Ooh, of course. Well, hey, look, they just went through a massive fight before with the entire Brotherhood. Of course they've earned some time off, you know?
Yeah. When Robot Man's chest alarm starts going off, beep, beep, and this guy next to him starts complaining and he says, it's just a bomb, I slipped under your seat. And the guy looks, huh? That is not a joke you can make these days.
No, it's not.
Anyway. Back at the headquarters, at that exact same moment, we see that the chief is in his wheelchair, is about to get thrown by Mandrid when Gar turns into a dinosaur with hair and attacks. Because Mandrid is a fairly large fellow, if we didn't mention that before. Like, he's probably about 3 people tall.
And at least, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of thumping and whacking. And I don't think Gar's doing that well at first, but then he manages to grab Mandrid's hand and fling him against the wall. And, but Mandrid zaps him. And, Gar is out cold when Rita arrives with the rest of the team because they decided to grab her on the way back from the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And more fighting. And Larry manages to get a good shot in with the negative energy in the back. Mandrid's reaching for his scepter. He zaps Larry, and then Mento comes in. And Mento has had enough, and he basically flings Mandrid into space with his scepter. I'm assuming that's what happens because we have no explanation of why his scepter flies him away unless he's getting away. I don't understand.
Well, I think it's somehow he's pointed the scepter at the ground, and the energy pulse has pushed him away. And that's how he manages to escape. But it's, it's a bit, Cliff says, dig that. He uses solar energy to propel him through the air. I've seen a man throw a hammer, but never vice versa.
And I'm thinking that's probably the last time we ever see Mandrid.
I can't recall seeing him outside of this story ever, which is a shame.
That means Mandrid is still out there. He could come back.
I hope you're listening, Gerard Way. You
know. He could get into amateur theatre.
Yep. Yep. Sure.
Cool. Anyway, meanwhile, we're back in court the next day, and we see that this time it's going Mento's way because he has all this evidence against Daltrey, and they basically prove that Daltrey is a bad guardian. Mm-hmm. But he plays his trump card and says, hang on, this kid is in the Doom Patrol and they are endangering him, so therefore I'm a better guardian than them. But then Gar Logan walks in dressed as Beast Boy. So the Gar Logan's in the stands waiting, and there's another Gar Logan there. And he tells the judge that he's the one and only Beast Boy. And the judge rules in their favor. And Gar's like, what? What's going on? And Mento's going, shh, don't worry. Just wait till we get back to our place. So it's a secret. You idiot. And then back at Dayton Manor, we see that Rita has changed her shape to look like Beast Boy and has disguised herself as Beast Boy. So, and everything works out and everyone ends with a laugh.
Oh, ah, bless.
Wow, what a great issue. I'm very pleased that the guardianship of Beast Boy has been resolved.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because once the judge throws the current case out of the courtroom, Steve sits up and says, you know, Your Honor, my wife and I, well, we'd like to adopt the boy. And then he says, I think. So it's like, I'm kind of doing it for Rita. But yeah, one thing that got me is that, okay, Rita shrank her body down to be the same size as Gar and put on his costume. But how did she do the green skin?
Comic book science. Okay. She was wearing a mask, I thought.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, good mask, though.
Very good mask.
Who made the mask? We will never know, and we're not going to dwell on it because this F is going quite long. So I think that might... Oh, anything to add about that one, Mike? Sorry.
It's action-packed. It's a lot of fun. There's great, weird comic book science going on. Mandred is a bizarre yet fun character, and you're right. He's still out there somewhere, so...
Yeah. Bring him back. Bring him back. Anyway, and we have the start of the new subplot of Madame Rouge and her affection for the Chief. We'll have to see where that one goes.
Yes. Sure, nothing will go wrong at all.
Anyway, that's it for Doomsplaining. Stick a fork in it. It's done.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Prom, the host of Comic Reflections, a podcast devoted to Silver and Bronze Age comics. Join me and my spunky sidekicks, Jeff Barnhart, the crusty curmudgeon from Dogpatch USA, and Spencer Valadez, podcasting's very own Apache Chief, as we discuss the grooviest comic books of yesteryear. You'll find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and at comicreflections.wordpress.com. What are you waiting for? Tune in, turn on, and kick ass.
Time for the Mailbag of Doom. And last time when we had a show, which was 2 weeks ago, we asked everybody, what is the saddest comic that you've read? And we heard from a whole bunch of people. So firstly, we heard from Big Tim Styles, who wrote that comic, Cthulhu Williams. Cthulhu Jones? Cthulhu? Anyway, one of them. Yes. And he said, the saddest comic I've read, Walking Dead number 48, Rick DeCarl, Don't Look Back, tore my goddamn heart out. I think so.
Probably where the wife and the child died.
Oh, spoilers.
Show full of spoilers tonight. Aaron Long at Juice005 said, Tech 282. I'm still not ready to talk about it. I think that's a troll answer because Detective 282 was about a space cop helping Batman solve crimes on Earth, but the space cop didn't actually help with anything and took all the credit.
Right.
In your face, Aaron Long.
That's sad. We heard some Joseph, who's at Rusted Mecca, and Joseph said, Sandman 25, overwhelming sadness in this one as the character deals with bullying and ghosts. I think that's part of the Game of You arc.
It might be Season of the Mists.
Season of the Mists?
The one I'm thinking of, with the boy at the private school, and he comes across, ghosts of... If it's about the ghosts, yeah, it'll be Seasons of the Mists. Yeah.
So that's the Ghost Boy Detective's origin.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yes. Cool.
Newt Lake Victim here, Ostrakus 1 on Twitter, also known as Kevin. He said, I used this answer before, the tale of one bad rat by Brian Talbot. Though ultimately uplifting, it hits me hard every time I read it.
Yeah, that's the Beatrix Potter sort of file story that has very deep meanings. It's really good. Library read, that one for me.
Okay.
We heard from Corrine McCreary, who said Crisis number 7, which I believe is the death of Supergirl.
Yeah. And I think that's also the first time we've heard from Corrine. So thanks for joining us, Corrine.
Yeah, yeah. Corrie Marie 21 on the Twitter. Cool. Welcome.
Alan Middleton, at Professor Alan, again, another new Patrologist, I believe. He said, Identity Crisis number 1, it's a cry-inducer.
Oh, it is. Controversial pick, that one.
Mm.
Yes, he does the Quarter Bin podcast where he gets comics for a quarter and talks about them. He's great.
Off his luck. Wow.
Yeah, he knows a lot more than we do about old comics.
Gee, thanks.
It's true. Anyway, we heard from Greg A., who's at Garujo1, and he said, not sure if they were the saddest comics I've read, but nothing compares to the gut punch of reading Squadron Supreme 12 and The Last Days of the Justice Society in one sitting.
Oof, geez.
Don't do it in one sitting then, Greg.
Susan Cotton at Josie_Mommy on Twitter said, The New Frontier number 1. From DC Comics. She said she saw the question of the week and thought of it before today's post on Darwin Cook's passing, which adds to the sadness, at least for her. So yeah, that was another very sad thing that happened since we were last on air with the mighty Darwin Cook passing away.
That's terrible. Yeah. Too young. Too young.
And it was even more of a shock because the morning I woke up, he was in the news that he was going into palliative care, and then by the time it was evening, he had left us. So, loss of a great man and a great talent there. Yeah.
We heard from Bud A, or Arbad F09, and he said, Gaiman and McKean's Hold Me in Hellblazer, which is a great little story. I think that was the one where I complimented Jamie Delano on how well that story was written, and then he told me that he didn't write it, which was a super awkward moment.
Yes. Obviously. Ryan Daly, at RyanDaly01 on Twitter, said, even though it's essentially a retelling of the death of Captain Marvel, Silver Surfer Requiem got to me.
Never read that.
Never read either of them.
Okay. No. And he said another one, also Generation X number 4, which I've not read either. I don't know what's sad about it.
I did read Generation X back in the day, but yeah, I can't recall what happened in that one. I don't know, sad teenage mutant, I'm guessing.
You're going to say Turtles then?
No. Hero Word Elder at Karthik Kakarala said, I don't know about the saddest, but I specifically wanted to go with a less death-based one, Astonishing X-Men 57 by Liu and Walter.
You done that one? I've not done that one.
No, that's probably past my X-Men reading years, so not sure what happened to that one.
We heard from Endless Mike again, who's at MA Solko, and he said, as non-spoiler as possible, the ending of Why the Last Man, number 58. Those final three issues are heartbreaking. Yes, highly recommend Why the Last Man. Hey, and Endless Mike has a, looks like an elongated man logo, which matches E&M from Endless Mike, which is cool.
Moby One at Shmoby One said, there's some crazy emotion towards the end of Why the Last Man in more than one place that left an impression on me. Yeah, it was a really good series. Yeah.
Yes. We heard from Ange, Dr. Ange, 70 on Twitter, our very good friend, and he said, I will email more, but 100 times this book, The Scene, Superman 423, well up every time. So that's from the Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow story, which was sort of Alan Moore's seeing off of the Silver Age Superman before the around the time of the Crisis.
Right. Okay. Will Fish at Will Fish said, I'm more often struck by sad moments or pages like the emotional child cruelty page of Buzzkill number 4. And I'm going to steal Buzzkill, the miniseries, as my answer because the ending of that just ruined me. That was Buzzkill is basically a superhero who gains his powers from drugs and alcohol. But there's this really sad backstory about his personal life, and my God, it kicked me in the guts. And it's one of my favorite things that Donny Cates has ever written. So, yeah, that's my answer as well for this time. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Never read that. Not even heard of it till tonight. Well, I heard from Rift, at Rift1821, my good friend Rift, whose house I'm sitting in right at this second. And he said, Identity Crisis, all of it. The death of Sue, who did it, and why the wiping of Batman's memories. Also, Colossus becoming a bad guy. I don't remember that in Identity Crisis. And we also heard from Matt Roberts. Long time since we've heard from Matt. Mr. Oberts on Twitter. And he said, Lost Dogs by Jeff Lemire. Absolutely heartbreaking.
Oh, God, with a title like that.
Yeah.
Don't know if I want to get into that. We also heard from Katie Solovan, at Katie Scarlet 94. And she read him with Daredevil Born Again.
Oh, what a good comic.
It's a good one. I've not read
it. Oh, it's the best Daredevil comic ever.
Wow, the best one and the saddest one, apparently.
Yeah. I believe it was number 3 in the top Marvel stories of all time, as voted by the readers, and it should have been number 1. That's my opinion.
Okay.
And the opinion of several people. Hey there, Fractures. Here you
go. We also got some answers back over on the Facebook page. We heard from Martin Gray.
Who? And
Mart Gray?
No, don't know.
Never heard of him.
New listener.
Sorry. Martin sent this in on Twitter. My apologies. He said, so saddest moment for question of the week. Aqua Baby, Valeria version 1. I go for when Barry Allen woke up, asked for Iris, and found she was brown bread? Ah! Cockney rhyming slang. Dead. Right. Okay. Meanwhile, actually, over on the Facebook page itself, we heard from Richie O'Hara Beamond. He said, oh man, I kill giants, for sure. Even the synopsis makes me tear up. The wrap-up of Kieran Gillen's Journey into Mystery Run was a full-on punch in the feels, too. And Richie says he's then quietly crying to himself, oh, comics. I Kill Giants is a heart-wrencher as well.
Vouch for that.
Yeah. Doug Zavisha also got in touch on Facebook, and he said, I'm going to go with Final Crisis Requiem.
Ooh, it's a deep cut. Yeah. That's the tribute. That's in the wake of Martian Manhunter's death, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
So it's all about Martian Manhunter. But he came back. It's all good.
Oh, phew. And Jacob Megwoods got in touch on Facebook and said, off the top of my head, the death of Sue Dibney. I'm sure I'll think of better ones, but there are a ton of parts in Identity Crisis that make my eyes rain. And we should also give a shout out to Trekker Talk, Warlord Worlds, and Xenozoic Xenophiles.
Yeah, they're all podcasts by Darren and Ruth Sutherland. Who are very prolific podcasters, but they've been doing lots of retweets for us lately. So,
thanks, guys. You know,
love their work. Excellent. You should all go and listen to their podcast. They don't do mainstream DC podcasts. They do these really great 80s comics. So,
cool.
Yeah, so Xenozoic Tales is Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. Warlord Worlds is all the Mike Grell comics for DC in the 80s and some others. And Trekker Talk is about the Trekker comic by Ron Randall. So, very interesting stuff. If you've not read them, you can just listen to their podcast and it'll take you through them.
Sweet.
Now, we got a letter from Jeff Nettleton, who's one of the big fans of the Fire and Water guys, who I thought would come over when we started JL May, and he did. So, anyway, we got a lovely email from him that says, hello, guys, first-time listener. I greatly enjoyed the broadcast. JLA U1 is a great favourite as it captures the characters well while adding its own unique story. It's well-paced and builds to a spectacularly epic conclusion. Spoilers. My JLA was the satellite era of the 70s, and this carried that spirit. With a bit more modern character development and some spectacular art, I particularly enjoyed the two issues as it highlighted the Doom Patrol, which was a rare treat for me. I read the Paul Kupperberg stuff until Eric Larson came aboard, and some of the Morrison run, but at that point I'd seen very little of the original series. This was a fun use of the characters, and after reading some of the original material, it felt like it captured them well. Sure did. In your discussion, you bring up whether the JLA needs Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. They are the key components in my era, but I always preferred the other characters. Adam Strange was always a favorite, where he was a guest star, which was how I was introduced to the team. Green Arrow and Black Canary were favorites, as was Zatanna when she joined. However, I am somewhat of an outsider, as Red Tornado was always one of my favorites. You are an outsider, Jeff. However... Part of it was the costume, I think. Part of it was the allowed for more dynamic visuals. I always felt the book was stronger when it focused on the characters who didn't have their own regular series. I agree with you, Jeff. Actually, I really love Adam Strange and the way he pops into JLA stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to answer the previous episode's question. What? Can he do this? I guess he can.
Sure.
About favorite maxi series. A bit late. Mine, though it wasn't exactly intended to be a 12-issue maxi series, was Alan Moore's... Flipping the page, top 10. Ooh. It was just an incredibly fun book with Moore stretching his comedy muscles a bit while still delivering complex stories. Xander Cannon and Gene Haar provided some great artwork filled with all kinds of Easter eggs, which let you savor each page. A particularly favorite scene was the battle between the Ultra Mice and the Atom Cats. Both sides featured realistic images of mice and cats, but while wearing recognizable superhero costumes. The mice included Mighty Mouse, Atomic Mouse, and Danger Mouse. And there is the cosmic event that presents a mouse form of Marvel's Eternity that looks suspiciously like a certain corporate mascot. It was just a truly well-done little series. Apart from that, I would throw out Camelot 3000, which Ryan should enjoy when he gets around to reading it. It's a very well-done and sadly underappreciated look at King Arthur. Yes, because Ryan said he said Camelot 3000, which he's planning to read at some point.
Right.
So, yeah, Top 10. I actually own the Absolute edition of Top 10. It's ooh, the only ooh. Absolute I own because it's that good. And I'm poor. Anyway, as for this week's question, that's tough. I don't know if it's so much sad as touching, but the DC Christmas with the Superheroes number 2 story from Alan Brennett and Jose Garcia Lopez, praise be his name, as we should say, should old acquaintances be forgot, is one that leaps to mind. The story features Dead Man as he's feeling angry and depressed, and he watches people enjoying the holiday season and contemplates that no one ever sees the things he accomplishes. He meets a young blonde woman who gets him to see things differently, to understand that heroes do things because they can and they should, not because anyone will see it and give them thanks or recognition. See, she is so joyously optimistic and embodies the true nobility of a hero that it changes Dead Man's view. She tells him she has to go, and he asks her name. She tells him, is Kara. The story brings tears to my eyes every time I read it, as it really encapsulates true heroism, and it's such a moving tribute to Supergirl after she was gone from continuity.
Oh.
I have heard Dr. Ange podcast about that comic with the Fire and Water guys. Mm-hmm. The other book I would nominate is Pedro and Me by Judd Winnick. I never cared for his DC writing or his Barry Ween series, but this was heartfelt memoir of his friendship with Pedro Zamora, his castmate on MTV's The Real World, San Francisco. For those unfamiliar, Zamora was HIV positive and spent his time educating people about AIDS. His spirit touched a lot of people through the show, and Winnick really captures it well and shares the heartbreak of seeing a stranger who became a friend have his light snuffed out by his disease. Anyway, I enjoyed the show, and I look forward to the next episode. Take care, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, I always wanted to read Pedro Me, and I always wanted to see that series of The Real World. I don't think it ever aired in Australia, though I know of it.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it did. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. My voice is going, Mike. Do you want to do the next one?
I will do the next one then, which is from Jimmy...
McGlinchey.
Jimmy McGlinchey. Yeah, I was going to get there. God. And Jimmy says, hi, Mike and Paul. I must say, when I subscribed to your podcast to get the JL May episodes, I did not expect a personal greeting when the JL May came out. Glad to be personally welcomed to the show. A good way to hold on to me as a listener. Smiley face. really love the two issues that you described. I think for a fledgling team that the JLA was at the time, pairing them with another team that was slightly dysfunctional, like the Doom Patrol, was a good way to go. Wade and Augustine really captured the personalities of the Doom Patrol very well, and the interactions with John and Arthur were developed very well. Linking Hal and Larry together by way of their test pilot backgrounds was a stroke of genius. Just a word on my Doom Patrol background. This was very much a late development. I never got into Morrison series when I first started collecting comics in the late 80s/early 90s, and they were always a background component to any crossover or historical piece that was produced at that time. I think the first story, apart from JLA Year One, that I remember reading was their reintroduction in the Claremont and Burns JLA story, The Tenth Circle, which was not the best introduction to the team. Oh, yeah. And was especially confusing given what I did know about the team before that. It was only when Giffen and Clark's series came around that I really got to enjoy the Doom Patrol concept. I got the two Showcase Presents volumes of Doom Patrol, and these were a lot of fun too. Regarding the question of the week, two of the saddest issues I remember reading were Justice League Europe 35, when Silver Sorceress sacrificed herself to defeat Dream Slayer in the climax to the Breakdown Saga, as Giffen DeMatteis' JLI was my first foray into DC Comics. This really felt like the end of an era, and the sadness of her teammates, particularly Blue Jay, on her death was palpable. And the other one is Animal Man 20 from Grant Morrison's run, where Buddy Baker is dealing with the aftermath of the death of his wife and kids. Very heartbreaking and real. Great show, guys, and looking forward to hearing more about the Doom Patrol. Best wishes, Jimmy. Thanks, Jimmy.
Well, Jimmy stole my answer for the saddest comic, because I was going to say Animal Man 20, which is Animal Man reeling from the death of his family in a very real way that you don't see in comics.
Oh,
like,
geez.
He you know, almost commits suicide in the midst of that. And,
wow.
Yeah, what a fantastic comic that is, and part of a fantastic run, which one of my favorite Grant Morrison things to this day.
Oh, crikey.
Crikey. Are there any more emails, Mike?
There is one more from Dr. Ange. Shall I read it?
Yeah, please do.
I shall. And Ange says, his answer for the sad issue is, the crisis had happened and Supergirl was dead. But as I read across number 7, the issue where Supergirl dies, I wasn't sad. Was I disappointed she had been killed and scrubbed from the collective memories of everyone? You bet. But the truth was she died saving the universe. It's a great story, memorable and heroic. I don't think the sadness of losing my favourite character hit me until Superman 423, the first part of Moore's Whatever Happened To storyline, closing out the Bronze Age Superman before Byrne took over. In that issue, Superman is under siege from his enemies. The Legion comes from the future to visit, and travelling with them is Supergirl. This is a younger Supergirl sporting her original outfit, talking like a kid, asking if she grew up to be pretty. It is a gut punch to Superman. He has to pretend like everything is fine with this Kara, knowing she has died in the current timeline. When she asks where her current self is, he has to lie to her. The scene is so touching, reminding me about what I like about these characters, but also showcasing the loss of innocence. For Kara fans, this was the eulogy we needed.
Wow. Mm,
yeah. Thanks, Ange.
Good stuff.
Mm. Oh. Glad we got all that out of our system. Lots of feelings in tonight's show.
Yeah. I think that's probably it for the Mailbag of Doom then.
Sure is. And I think it's well past time that we sign off for this episode of Waiting for Doom. So thanks everyone for joining us once again. As always, you can reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Twitter page. You can reach out to Wilfred at WFDpod, and you can get in touch on the Facebook page for Waiting for Doom. And what's coming up next week, Paul?
Next week, we're going back to the Kupperberg Larsen run with issues 15 and 16 of Doom Patrol Volume 2.
Ooh.
So exciting. We're getting very close to the end of the Kupperberg Larsen era of Doom Patrol.
And we're getting edging towards the end of Volume 1 as well. We've only got about, 10 issues left of that?
Something like that.
Yeah. And what about the question of the week for next week, Paul?
Question of the week. Where do I get them from? I'm so good. I came up with this question. What's your favorite comic related novel?
Yeah, crap. Okay. Yeah.
You can read, don't you know?
I can read. I'm reading a novel right now. Thank you very much. Well, not at this point in time while we're talking.
I thought you were podcasting right now. What are you doing?
When I'm not podcasting, I am actually reading a novel at the moment. So, yeah.
Better man than me, Gunga Din.
Okay. Alrighty, let's sign off. Say goodnight, Paul.
Alright, bye.
See you all next time.
Thanks, everybody.